Okay, well, entrez. Welcome. So, did you guys enjoy the keynote? It was pretty strong. It was strong. Anders always delivers. Today, I'm going to take you on a little journey here and show you. I've got quite a number of demos lined up. That are going to show off our investments in Office 2010 along with SharePoint 2010 and what we've done for developers to make it more programmable, to make it easier to develop on from a tooling perspective, and just the various investments that we've made there. I'm going to show you integration with external data. How do you get, this will be interesting for some of our folks who love that sort of thing. How do you bring external data into the Office applications? And so on. So the first part, so I'm going to divide the presentation up into a few chunks. The first part that I'm going to take you through fairly rapidly is just going to be to give you context. What are the investments that we've made in this release and why did we make those investments? Kind of give you the logic. And then I'm going to just take you quickly into the detail. But I do want to set the stage because we have made pretty big investments in this release for the world of business integration, data integration, and so on. And also UI extensibility. A lot of people want to plug things into the Office applications, and we're making that, we're improving that experience, and we've also improved the developer tools. So I'm going to give you that context, and then take you into some different pieces on data interoperability. I'm going to take you into UI extensibility, tooling improvements. And I'm going to toss in something that I actually hadn't planned on doing, but I just felt like it, so I'm going to put it in. I'm going to show you how to integrate SQL Azure in your Office applications. Is anybody interested in this? Okay, yeah, we get lots of hands. All right. So my name is John. I'm a senior product manager at Microsoft. I've been in the Office division for several years. I did have a stint where I worked on Visual Studio for three releases. I worked on the Visual Studio tools, the Office development tools in Visual Studio. And now I'm back in Office. So I've been doing the same general thing for about a dozen years because I like it. So here are our session objectives. I'm going to show you basically the platform stack. How do we look at Office with SharePoint? I've also got, in my demo here, I've got some UC integration, so Unified Communications, which is pretty slick. So I'm going to basically show you the platform stack. Here's just a kind of a, I'm no graphic designer, but obviously. Basically, I wanted to set the stage a little bit for when we talk to IT decision makers, somebody who's running, you know, the director of application development or, you know, the CTO for a company, they're facing some challenges. One is they need to serve the needs of the business, but they need to do it on a smaller budget, which means they need to get more out of the software that they've got or the software they're about to put down, you know, to lay down, the bits they're laying down. So they need to basically extract more value from the investments they make. So they need to have a better manageable world, where they know what kind of code is running, where it's running, maintain their code better, and reduce the administrative burden on the solutions that they've deployed. They need to have a better user experience. Users are where, how many of you look at email on your phones? Can I see some hands? Yeah, right? Simple example, but could you imagine your world right now if you couldn't do that? And more things are going to be moving that direction. Users need an experience that works on their PC, on their phone, or when they're not at their computer, they're at, let's say, a customer's site and they have just a web browser. Think of Outlook Web Access and how much that has improved our lives as we've been able to work on our email when we're not sitting at our computer. So providing that experience and more of it, and also rich platform services, integrating with workflow and data integration and things like that. So, What are the investments we've made? We basically invested in three key areas. We've evolved the platform with new services and extensibility. much deeper integration with SharePoint than ever. SharePoint has really matured, and Office has got more hooks into SharePoint than ever. We have connected cloud and on-premises services to provide this experience. Now we have the Office web apps so that, for example, if I save a document up to SkyDrive, or if I'm using our BPOS offering, and I can actually open up my files on the web, in the web browser, using the Office web apps. They're lightweight editing, but they're the Office web apps. This is new. And so we have this consistent experience, and we have developer tools for all skill levels. We've made pretty big enhancements in Access, VBA, and Visual Studio. So now, what do these specific investments look like? This is the probably one of the most valuable slides of these first few, because this really shows this is what we've done. If you wanted to say, well, John, give me, you know, the 10 bullets of what did you add? Here they are. So we have Fluent UI and Backstage programmability. I'm going to be showing you pretty much almost everything you see in this list is what I'm going to be demoing for you. So don't worry. This won't just be a slide. So we have UI, Backstage. We have the new Backstage view, which I'll show you in just a moment. Easier management of your and deployment of your solutions with Visual Studio. I'll be explaining that in greater detail. We have an application compatibility program. This is new. I'll be explaining that in a little more detail. We have simplified InfoPath design. This is one I won't be showing you today, but it is something that we've done. Now you can create forms for SharePoint lists using InfoPath. That's new, and that's something that a lot of people are very interested in doing. Publishing your solutions to the web with Access. I'll explain what that is, and I'll show you a demo of what that looks like. Continued commitment to VBA. A lot of people wonder, what are we doing with VBA? We have an enduring commitment for quite a long time now, and it is going ahead in Office 2010 with VBA. And we've upped the messaging around VBA. A lot of our customers are still using it, and we're not discouraging that. We're actively encouraging customers, please continue to use VBA. It's just fine. It's not necessarily a competitor to Visual Studio. They both serve different purposes. So please go ahead and do that. And one of the big challenges with VBA is that there's an application compatibility question. I have VBA macros running, but then I installed a new version of Office and stuff started to break. That's why we have the application compatibility program. And I'll explain to you how that mitigates those problems. Programmability for the Office data and formats. We have the OpenXML SDK. We just released version 2.0 of the OpenXML SDK. It's out on the internet right now. It's got some great tools, easier to work with the OpenXML file formats. We have Word services. Basically, it's server-side Word, not for, you know, bolding and underlining and italics and creating tables, but it's for document generation and document conversion. Scenario, I have a million documents. They're all in .doc format. I want to convert them all, or they're DOCX, I don't care, and I want to convert those all to PDF, all million or 10 million or 500 million documents, doesn't matter. We have now Word services. It's basically technology built in conjunction with SharePoint. You run it, and it'll go through very quickly. It's built to scale, and it will go through that directory, grab all 3 million documents or whatever, and turn them all into PDFs and put them wherever you want them. Very simple. We've got really good documentation of that and examples up on MSDN already. Excel services for calculation and rendering. We have a JavaScript object model now. We have the REST APIs in Excel services, so we've enhanced those services. We have InfoPath services. Those have been enhanced. We've got the OpenXML file formats. We've documented PST. We have integrated platform services, workflow, authentication services, and data integration. Okay, so Backstage view. The Backstage view is new in Office 2010. And basically what it does is it gives you a view of your world outside of the immediate document authoring experience. Give me an example. Here, let's switch for just a moment. We'll go to Word for just a second here. So if I go to Word, it actually looks a little better now in the RC candidates. This is beta 2. We've improved the look and feel, add a little more polish, but this still shows the Backstage pretty well. So the Backstage view is right here. So if I wanted to print my document, I don't have anything in it right now, but this is print preview. Notice it's all right here inside of Word. I don't have to go, you know, pop up modal dialog boxes and sift through all of that. That experience is right here. Notice we have save, save as, open, close, information. Any information about the documents is all right there. The help system is here. Configuring my options for Word, they're all here. And this is in all of the Office applications. Access, Publisher, OneNote, PowerPoint, Outlook, Excel, Project, Visio. They all have this same backstage view. Now, here's what's good for us, because we're not here because we just want to talk about end user stuff. We're here because we're developers. And if I had really sweaty arms, I'd be walking around going, developer, developer. But no. Okay. I'd also have to be much taller and smarter and
less hair,
maybe. So, but yeah, here's what's good for us. This is programmable. So think about the needs of your business or the businesses that you serve. You can plug custom, and I'm going to show you custom in here. So that's one of the demos I'm going to show you in just a moment. It's actually this one right here where it says work items. That's custom. Okay. So here's the idea. It shows you everything Office knows about your document and everything you can do with the document. Okay? So this isn't about bolding and italics and so on. This is about sharing, saving, new with the templates, and these kinds of things. So this is custom. What you're looking at here is a screenshot of something that's customized. It's programmable like the ribbon, very similar model to the ribbon. Ribbon customization, we've added some enhancements. For those of you who've done ribbon development in the past, there were some limitations in the ribbon development. Not in the ribbon architecture, but in the custom things that we would create. There were a few limitations, and we've corrected those. You can now add, remove, and move tabs. That's something that you couldn't do programmatically before. You can add, remove, move groups. Again, these are things, if you haven't done ribbon development before, you won't care about these because they're now just part of the new world of Office 2010. If you've done ribbon development in the past, you've bumped up against these most likely. You've encountered these. And now you'll see that they also, you can create custom groups with built-in commands, custom commands, and we have high-density layout. Basically, when you shrink an Office application, let's go back here for just a minute. You'll notice something here as I grab, if I start to shrink this application just like this, oh, I closed it because I'm a genius. Now I will demo. See, this is complicated. I'm not. This is so technical. I'm actually going to shrink the application. Very technical. Not many people can do it. Don't try this at home. All right. So I grab this. As I shrink it, you'll notice that I shrunk it too much. You'll notice that Word understands what to do. It starts collapsing things down in the best way possible. So you see styles now is shrunk down to this. Editing has shrunk down. Everything starts to collapse down, and it does it in a very smart way. Here was the challenge. Prior to Office 2010, if you created your own custom ribbons up here, your own custom groups, your own custom tabs, your own custom things, when you would shrink the application, all the built-in ones from Office 2007, they would all shrink very nicely. Beautiful. But your custom ones wouldn't. They stayed the way you originally created them. They were just rigid. Okay? This is not great. And so we've improved that so that now if you add custom ones, they will actually collapse down. We call that high density layout. It's just a term. Okay. So programmability refinements. We've continued to consolidate the Outlook object model. If you've done a lot of Outlook development, I've been doing it for many years. One of the challenges with Outlook is that you had the Outlook object model, you had Mappy, and you were constantly, you're sort of schizophrenic. You were going between two worlds, and it made you dance like this. And so we've consolidated that down to now where you can just use the Outlook object model. Makes sense. Just go use the Outlook object model. It will do almost everything you need to do. Are there still really advanced scenarios where you may need Mappy? Maybe so, but honestly, almost all of the scenarios you now want to develop on, you can use just that. We have a navigation pane in Outlook now. In the left side navigation pane, you can actually plug things into there, add and remove those at runtime, which is new. We have a new media API in PowerPoint. One of the great things about PowerPoint 2010 is that now you can embed videos, and you can a user can edit the video. They can trim, they can mirror, they can add filters to make it like orange or gray, you know, take a color one, turn it to black and white. You can do these things for a user. What's great about it is many of those same operations you can do through code. You couldn't do these in previous releases of PowerPoint for developers. If you embedded a video or an audio file, it just looked like a shape. All Outlook, I mean, PowerPoint knew is that it was a shape. It couldn't distinguish your movie from a rectangle or a circle. And that's changed. We've added this media API, which is a pretty big deal. Excel, we have two really cool user features in Excel for users, Sparklines and Slicers. If you haven't read up on these, I encourage you to do it. I demoed Sparklines and Slicers almost a year ago at our Worldwide Partner Conference. And I had so many people come up to me, and they looked at how Sparklines, they're very simple features, but they're super powerful. And one guy came up to me, and more than one person came up to me and said, this feature alone makes me want to upgrade to Office 2010. Just these two little features in Excel were so compelling. They're very good features. That might be over-enthusiastic, but it's still at least a sense of how powerful some of these features are. Here's what's great is that these are programmable features. We've also got improved scale. We have 64-bit Office. For most people, 32-bit, and in fact, in almost all cases, 32-bit is where you want to go. But with 64-bit Office, you can actually have larger file sizes. And this is mostly for a small set of Excel users who use these really, really big files. So that's an improvement. And OneNote, we've got an enhanced import routine. So these are just some of the bread and butter types of improvements we've made. For Visual Studio, we're carrying forward all of our 2007 scenarios into Visual Studio 2010. We have an improved C-sharp experience. You can now do optional parameters in C-sharp in Visual Studio. Yay, right? So this is something VB.NET developers could do all along, but C-sharp was left out. You couldn't do optional parameters. The reason why that's important is because many of the object models in Office, if you call some of the methods, will have parameters on them, and some of them will have 10, 15, 16 parameters or more, but you only need one or none. The problem was in C#, if you had 16 parameters and they're all optional, you still had to note all 16 parameters. You had to actually put in type.missing, comma, type.missing, comma, type.missing, comma, type.missing, comma, type.missing, comma, 16 times. You didn't have to ever do that in VB.NET. It just instinctively knew, oh yeah, we don't need to include anything, so we're good to go. And that's been improved with .NET 4.0. They've made enhancements to C# so that now they are compatible, they have priority with VB.NET in that way. We've improved the deployment support. It used to be that you had to deploy what were called the primary interop assemblies, the PIAs. The primary interop assemblies are basically wrappers around the COM object models in Office, and you had to deploy these with your Visual Studio solutions. With .NET 4.0 and Office 2010, you don't need to do that anymore. So we've reduced the footprint of your deployment for your Visual Studio solutions, made it much simpler. We have platform solution building. We now have SharePoint tools built right into Visual Studio. So this is a big deal because when we talk about a platform, you know, it's got to be a platform. Like, we can't just say that. It's actually got to be one. And the way you do that, part of the way you achieve that is by the tools. So now I go into Visual Studio, I'll see all my Office solutions, and I'll see also my SharePoint solutions, and they can be combined into one Uber solution, if you will. So that's a big deal, a nice innovation. I worked on those SharePoint tools, and so we're pretty excited about those. So deployment, I just talked about these, the improvements we've made there. Application compatibility, we've improved the application compatibility dramatically in this release. We now have a set of tools, we have a website, we have all kinds of things. So let's say you are considering rolling out Office 2010. But you know you've got a ton of macros and Visual Studio, you know, add-ins for Office that you created with Visual Studio, and you're wondering, if I install Office, like, is something going to break? Will my solutions run? Do we dare install Office 2010? Will it work? Here's what you do. You go to our new TechNet site. If you go to technet.microsoft.com/office, we have our compatibility center there. We have an Office environment assessment tool. It's a tool you point at a desktop. So let's say you're on the finance team, and we know that we've deployed 7 add-ins. You know, we don't know for sure. We think we've deployed some stuff to your desktop, but we're not sure. You point this tool at his desktop, and it will tell you every single customization for Office that's running on his desktop. It'll export that to a log file. Now I know what's running on this machine. We also have a tool that's the Code Compatibility Inspector, CCI. Now I know what solutions are on your machine. I can now go to the source code in VBA or Visual Basic or C#, and I can go to those solutions, point the Code Compatibility Inspector, and it will inspect all of the code and flag anything that might be deprecated or an API that might not work in the new version. And it will log all of that for you. So now I get a nice log file that will tell me line number 32 needs to be changed in order to make sure that this runs on Office 2010. That's a big deal. And that will work also for your VBA code. We also have, like I said, this TechNet site where companies, if you are an ISV or if you are working with an ISV or using an ISV software, they register on the TechNet site and they can say, I'm ISV X and we have this add-in and it's running and here are some known issues, and they can go to this TechNet location and they can advertise all their information and then people can comment on it. So it's kind of a self-policing compatibility center for ISVs, which is a great thing. All right, now, let's start doing some demos. So that's just the beginning, okay? I've only just begun. I've got so much more to show you. But now, let us turn our attention to this solution. So here's what I'm gonna show you after I'm done doing this. Here's what I'm gonna show you. Imagine, I'm going to show you a fairly large end-to-end demo, okay? And this demo is built like this. Here's the scenario. We work at a company, and here's the thing. Every quarter, we produce a quarterly report on the state of the business. That's our sales, cost of goods sold, you know, earnings, whatever, okay? Every quarter. It could be every week, could be every month, we don't care, but in this case, it's every quarter. Now, I need to get contributions from a lot of different people. This is a very structured process. I could do it sort of the old school way. And the way that is, I send an email to 15 people and I say, hey, everybody, I've got a report to do. Can you all give me your content? And it's all due by next Friday. And I know you won't give it to me next Friday. And then I'll ping you on Saturday. And so on. Okay, so that's what's going to happen. Now, that's the old way. And so you end up doing tons of email, and then people are sending you content, and then you're copying, pasting content into the document. But then you had one version of the document, but I had a different version, and then we got confused, and you overwrote my changes, and all heck breaks loose, and a black hole opens up in the universe, and everything gets sucked into it. Okay, I exaggerate. The scenario I'm going to show you now is, what if we provided this whole collaboration experience right inside of the Office applications, where I didn't have to email people, I didn't have to chase them down, I had all of the information and all the collaboration right inside of a unified experience. I'm going to show you basically two participants in this process. I am not a crook. I'm going to show you two participants in the process. One will be the general manager who has to create this report. I will show you the one other person who's going to contribute content from the finance team. So let's start it. So here we are. We have a solution. We have an intranet site right here. And on this intranet site, if I go to our home, I got to wake it up here. We have a document library. So let's look quickly at what we have here. We have a document library that you see right here. We have some lists for contacts. Let's go back here. We have our division reports. These are the reports that we're going to be creating. I have contacts, as I just mentioned. These are external. These are contacts for our business, our customers, and so on. We have a list of orders, things that they are ordering, and we then have our full, this is our contact list, and then this is the list of actual customers. We're creating the division report, so we're going to start there. We're going to start with division report, and all I'm going to do is go over here to documents, and we are going to create a brand new document or a new division report. Now, when I click on this, it's going to open up a template inside of Word. This template has some pre-baked content, some stuff I already put in there because I want to facilitate the document authoring experience. And so I've tied a custom document template. So we're going to go ahead and start it. We're opening up in Word now. So here's our template in Word. It's showing us our document information panel right here that has a bunch of metadata that is related to this division report. We're not going to fill this metadata out right now because we're going to let the system do it for us. So I'm just going to close that for now. So here it is. Here's my custom division report. So pretty. And what I'm going to do now, this, I'm the general manager. I need a contribution from somebody from the finance team. How am I going to get, I need our regional sales data. So in order to finish off this report, I need regional sales data from the finance team. I could email the whole finance team and ask them for this, but what I'm going to do is I'm simply going to add a placeholder. So I'm going to go right here. I'm going to go to our quick parts, and I'm going to add a placeholder or a quick part here, and I'm going to say regional sales data. And I need this from the finance team. We're going to put a due date of 5/2/2010. If I were in Europe for this demo, I'd switch it around to 2/5. Need regional sales data. Okay, that's it. So now I've put a placeholder in here. What I'm going to do is simply save the document now. So I'm going to go here. We're going to save the document back up to SharePoint. So far, there's no custom code here. Everything you're looking at so far is just out-of-the-box Office with a custom template in SharePoint. You can see I do this demo a fair amount. We're up to N, as in Netherlands. Okay, so we're going to save the document. I'm going to save this document, and what it's going to do is it's actually going to start a workflow. You can see it's uploading to the server. It's actually going to start a SharePoint workflow, and that SharePoint workflow is going to send a message to the finance team saying, you need to provide some regional sales data for this document. So that's basically all that's going to happen. The user can stay inside of here and continue, you know, authoring and doing, you know, the things that they normally would do. So they can stay here, they can keep, you know, changing their content. Now, before we look at the finance team, think about this GM. This general manager is putting in placeholders for not just one piece of data, but let's say 15 pieces of data, maybe 20 pieces of data. How would you manage that? So let's look. Inside the document, if you look here, I've put some other placeholders ahead of time so you can see what they would look like. So if I scroll down a little bit, right about here, you can see I've got other placeholders. Give me profits by product line. A chart showing productivity gains. These are all the little things I need from the finance team. And there might be some from our graphics department. Hey, graphics people, would you please give me an image that I can stick inside my Word document? And so imagine I have all these. Now, every one of these represents a workflow that has been started inside of SharePoint. Do I really want to go and look at every workflow and find out its status? What would be an easier way? The easier way is to use the backstage view. So what I do is we've actually programmed the backstage view right here with work items. When I click on this, I'm getting an all-up view of all of the workflows and all of these little placeholder item requests that I have out to my organization. So if I look, I have some that are financial, some that are for graphics, some that are other. You can see our new one is right here, and it's showing up there. Now, these are red. The reason why these three are red is because, notice what it says, items are past due. It's red because in my code, I check. If there are any items that are past due, I turn this red. If there are items that are not past due but are coming due, they're almost due, I turn it yellow. If nothing's past due, I just leave it like this color right here. I leave it white. So what's great about this is my user has not left. Remember, they have not left Word yet. They're still in Word. And yet they've already started workflows. They're sending requests to other teams, but they just keep authoring away. If they need to check status, they go here. If I click on these buttons, show me my financial items, it'll show me, again, the color coding is important here. And as I look down, you can see our new one. Notice it's not past due, and it's got it has not yet been assigned, so it's still out there in the ether waiting to be assigned. And so now I get a really good view, right, and saving the user time. Think about your organization. Think about the kind of things they do. What could you program inside of here? Now, keep in mind, the backstage view, one of the first questions you may have is, hey, can I just stick WPF controls inside of here? Can I go Silverlight? No. Can I use something even more mystical? No, you cannot. Actually, this is it's designed programmatically. It looks very much like the ribbon. The ribbon does not allow you to just stick WPF controls or Silverlight inside the ribbon. It's built kind of the same way. You have a certain set of controls. You have buttons, drop-downs, labels, text boxes, and so on. And you use that set of controls, and that's all you get. That said, there's a lot you can do with that set of controls. Look at how rich the Office ribbon is. That's using a predefined set of controls. So it's very similar in that respect. Okay, so now my user the finance team has been assigned this task. So what I'm going to do, my UC didn't kick off. I should have had a UC message by now, but that's okay. Usually the finance guy, he gets his UC message, but that's all right because his task is here. So what we're going to do is we're going to look at right here. If I scroll down, it's this item right here, regional sales data. This is the one that our finance team gets. And so he sees this, and he says, oh my gosh, we need regional sales data. So he's going to edit this item. And now, my finance person, this guy's bright. This guy is smart, okay? Because he did his work ahead of time. He knew that the report was coming. So 2 weeks ahead of time, he prepared the regional sales data. Yes. So it's already done, and it's in a Word document. Here, now, I want you to watch these next steps carefully because the simplicity of this is the magic of this demo. Because watch what happens. He has a separate document with the regional sales data. And all he's going to do is go get that document. So he's going to find it. It's right here. Scrolling down. There it is, regional sales data. He is going to put that document in here and attach it to the task. Then what he's going to do is say, my task is complete. Notice that this finance person has not looked at the general manager's document at all. He might not even have access to that document. All he knows is his regional sales data and a task. So what he does is he's attached it, and he said, I'm done. My task is complete, and he saves it. So that task is now done. Now let's go back to the general manager's view. So my general manager is back here in this Word document, and he's happily working along, as I said before. Now this is where things get interesting. So now what I'm going to do is he's making changes to the document. He's adding new paragraphs. He's doing whatever he's doing. He's going to save the document, and now watch what happens. The regional sales data just appeared inside the document. He never left the document, but the regional sales data from the other party just appeared inside of there. So think of this experience. My GM can author in Word, put in these placeholders. It's kicking off workflows. He sees the summary of the workflows in the backstage view. That simplifies the experience. All this is going on. We're taking out huge amounts of steps and process, and we're collapsing those down to just instances of code running. Does this answer all scenarios? No. But think of what you could do. I mean, all I'm trying to do with these demos is just light up possibilities in your mind. Hopefully, if you look at these, you go, I don't like his demo, but I would love to do this with this, this, and this in my company or with my customer. If that's where you get to, then that's the idea here. So we now have the regional sales data. It appears right there. Okay. Let's go back to the slides for just a second because I want to cover a few other items. And then we're going to come back to the demo, and I'm going to show you a few more pretty cool things. And I'm going to explain to you how I did this, because some of you are, what happened? How did that work? I'll explain it to you. Don't worry. All right. I hope that was my water. I don't know. Okay. Simpler solution design. I mentioned InfoPath earlier that we've improved the InfoPath experience. Now you can create forms for SharePoint lists. That's a big deal. A lot of people, they don't like having just the vanilla SharePoint list forms. They want to have custom ones. So when people add a new item, they have a custom form. And now you can do that with InfoPath. It's a pretty big deal. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the Access stuff in just a minute. So Access, it's much easier to create small team applications. One of the big challenges with Access that you may have encountered is that IT shops, companies that are, you know, their IT shop inside of a company, they typically aren't real excited about Access for one key reason. The users like it, but the IT admins don't typically like it. Any guesses why? What's that? They lose control. Very good. Martin knows very well. They lose control. So my little finance department or my inventory department, my accounts payable, my accounts receivable, my exchanges and returns, those little departments, they love to create these little applications, but the IT department has no idea where these databases are. They don't know where they live. Wah, right? What happens if somebody deletes one? You know, a black hole opens up in the universe and everything. No, it's, I exaggerate again. Okay? The other challenge with Access, there's a second big challenge, and that is, how do I give 100 people the ability to use this Access solution? They all have to install Access. They all have to then know where the database is. If the database gets moved, all of them can't use it now. I have to go and email all 100 people. What if it were 1,000 people? What if it were 10,000 people? How would that work? Well, that's those two things, admin and usability, you know, the accessibility of it, have been addressed in Office 2010. What you do now is you can, we have a new way of publishing to SharePoint. So it's basically, it's a simple button. You go into Access, you create your little application with your forms and your tables and your queries and all the good stuff. You press a button in the backstage view. It says, publish to SharePoint. It publishes your Access solution to SharePoint. It converts all of your tables into lists. It converts your forms into web forms. It converts your queries into lookup tables. It all becomes genuine bona fides articles in SharePoint. How do you back up this Access solution now? Anybody want to guess? I don't have to. I just back up my SharePoint machine. Yay. Admins love this. They're like, oh, great. So, okay. Now, how do I give 10,000 people access to the solution? I just give them a URL in SharePoint. Yay! Okay? Simple. And so these two things make it much better. So now, instead of paying your ASP.NET developers to create these little tiny applications all the time, you can now turn these departments, turn your users loose, and they can create these small tracking applications, publish them up to SharePoint, and basically IT is happy, users are happy, and everybody's happy. And we all, you know, we solve world peace, global warming, it's all done. Yes? What's that? Does it work with Access Data Pages? With Access Data Projects? I'm not exactly sure. I'd have to ask someone on the Access team that one. So good question. I'll give you my card. You email me. Okay. And then I'll answer for sure. It doesn't? You know this already? Okay, good. So we have somebody who's knows specifically. And he's for hire. Yeah. He'll give you his business card. I love this. Enterprising. Huh? Go Netherlands, man. We're trying to make some money. Does it work with other document management systems? It's designed specifically to work with SharePoint. So basically, when you install SharePoint, when you go to install SharePoint, you can say, I want to install Access Services. You install the Access Services, and that's what gives you the plumbing to publish. I'm actually doing this now. I used to, in my job, I would create spreadsheet after spreadsheet after spreadsheet, and I'd stick these spreadsheets up on a share. But these spreadsheets were really just, they were actually databases, and I had to do a lot of extra work in those. And what I've done now, because Microsoft is, we're eating our own dog food, we are allowing publishing these internally. And so now I am creating Access applications again, and I'm publishing this up to SharePoint, which is simplifying my life. It's improved my user experience. So I'm actually using these now. UI macros, this is just another thing. Now you can create solutions in Access without ever writing a line of code. We now have what's called the UI macros. We introduced data macros in Access 2007. We now have UI macros. So basically you can configure your UI without writing any code. It's a designer. We did this to not only lower the bar and make it easier for people to start writing things on Access, but also VBA code will not run on SharePoint. So the only way your code that will run on SharePoint is if you use these designers. In other words, it creates a ring fence. SharePoint will run anything that you create using these designers. If you go outside of these designers, SharePoint will ignore it. It'll still be there, but SharePoint just won't use it. So, Access 2010. Great. Visual Studio. Why is it going backwards? Okay. So, OpenXML SDK. So, I talked about earlier. Basically, we have SDK 2.0 has been released. We've got a lot of tools and helps and utilities and things in here. They can make it easier to work with the OpenXML file formats. Our file formats are something that we've made a big bet on for the future. We introduced them in Office 2007. We're continuing with those in Office 2010, and we're going forward with those. So if you are not yet involved in OpenXML, I encourage you to get into it because it is the future. It's the present and the future of Office development. I have a session tomorrow where I'm going to be going very deep on OpenXML. I've got some really cool demos on OpenXML. I'm going to be showing you how to generate things and convert things and use Word services and Access, Excel services and so on. So that's my session tomorrow. If you want to get into it a little bit, here's the thing. OpenXML is not designed to replace the Office object models. In other words, if you need to open up a specific document programmatically and change bold to underline, you're not going to do that with OpenXML SDK. OpenXML SDK is about the scenario I just did. So now, let's go back to my chart. So this is why I said I'd come back and I promised you I'd explain how this was done. How did this chart get here? This chart got here because I have a workflow solution running in SharePoint. I created it using Visual Studio. That workflow solution has event receivers on it. When I saved the document, do you guys remember I saved the document? And when that document got saved, you guys remember I pushed save, and then all of a sudden the chart appeared. That I have an event receiver on the workflow. That event receiver is listening and waiting for a very specific event for this document. By the way, this doesn't take any resources. Some people worry, my gosh, is that tying up SharePoint? Is that going to bring my SharePoint box to its knees? No, they actually designed SharePoint to scale up and out so that you don't have to worry about that. They've optimized it so that it's not just this process running in the background. I won't get into all the detail, but basically what SharePoint does is it dehydrates and rehydrates your workflow as it's needed. So it takes its state, converts it to XML, waits until something happens, pulls it back from XML, rehydrates the workflow, and puts it in memory. And it does this so that it optimizes. You could have lots of these running, and it's not going to take your SharePoint box down. If you go back to 2001, the original version of SharePoint, am I the only one that developed on that, by the way? I am. No, yes. Yes. So I started developing on SharePoint in 2001. And back in then, everything was in memory, in process. There was none of this other optimization, so it was a tricky business. And that has changed. So now, back to our sheep. Revenons à nos moutons. Here's what happens. That event receiver is waiting like the wolf for Little Red Riding Hood. This is getting creepy. And when the event happens that you save the document, it says, when the event happens, it checks, what kind of event was this? It's a save event. Then it knows that this workflow knows to go get this other piece of content because the task and the other things are linked. Remember the user, he attached the document to the task, he said 100%, he saved his task. All of that is, there's an ID with that that's associated with my workflow. So the task and the workflow are linked by an ID. So it says, the document's been saved, the task is complete, get the attached document, then it uses OpenXML, it cracks open that Word document, grabs just that chart piece through OpenXML, goes into the document that's already open, that the GM never closed, adds it to that, and then voila, the chart appears. By the way, there's a subtlety here that you may or may not know. There's a little subtlety happening, and that is, the only way that this is possible is because we introduced document co-authoring in Office and SharePoint 2010. So basically now, if we could take all of you, you guys could all open up the same Word document in real time, and it would never, you won't get that, you know that message that you used to get, like if you open the document, and then you open the document, you get this nasty message that says, he has this document open. You should go home now because you're not going to get any work done. And actually, it's worse because he's actually left town. He's got the document open on his laptop. He's on a plane headed to Indonesia. You're not going to see this document ever again. Okay? That's how it used to work. That's not how it works now. You can open the document. You can open the document. You can all at the same time. And what it does is it actually will allow you to all edit at the same moment in time, and it only locks at the paragraph level. So if you're authoring a paragraph and you go to try to author it, it'll say, he's got that paragraph locked. You can actually choose to override. There's a lot of subtleties, things you can do. But it's document co-authoring. In this demo I just showed you, the co-author is not the finance team. Anyone want to guess who the co-author is? It's the workflow. The workflow is the co-author. Clever. So the workflow is the co-author. If I had a prize, I'd give it to you right now because that is there. Yeah! Okay. So the document is the co-author. So all of this is powered using OpenXML. So it's great stuff. So OpenXML, we have OpenXML diff, which basically allows you to look at two XML files in OpenXML and see where the differences are. We have a class explorer, a document reflector. I won't go into all the details of these tools. I'm going to be delving into those more in the session tomorrow. But these are great things, okay? These are great things. They make it much, much better. All right. So the OpenXML SDK. Why is it going? Right, there we go. So this is what that co-authoring looks like. So if you look at this right here, this is what it looks like when that paragraph is locked. It'll tell me who's editing in that specific paragraph. I can then actually hover over their name and start an instant message or send them an email or start a phone call and all of that. Also, when I go to the backstage view, I can see a list of everybody who's authoring in the document at that moment in time. So there's a lot of rich information. This is a real live screenshot from one of my times I was demoing. There it is. So we've expanded on the server. We have co-authoring, access services, word services, Excel server, InfoPath, Project Visio. Yeah. The access services, this is the button. Publish to SharePoint. There it is. That is the button. It exactly looks a little bit different now in the RC bits, but it's basically the same. You push that button, publishes your solution up to SharePoint. Word services, it's like file save as on the server. You can read and write any format that the desktop application, so you can move from .docx to .doc, .doc to .docx, and so on. 100% fidelity down to the last pixel. It's 100% fidelity. We worked very hard on that piece. It's Word. The output's the same. API, it's a very simple API. There aren't tons of methods. It's a very light API. You just go into Visual Studio, you reference the Word Services library, and start writing a few lines of code, and you're good to go. It's really designed for high-volume doc generation and conversion. That's what I'm going to be demoing for you tomorrow. Excel Services, I already mentioned briefly that we have the new JavaScript object model. You can drive the UI using JavaScript from the server. And we have the REST APIs, updated Web Services API. I talked already a little bit about InfoPath forms. These slides are available after the show, so you guys can grab these slides, and you'll be able to keep the content. Okay. So I actually already demoed this piece. I already completed this demo. I was ahead of myself, where I showed you the file format and how that works. But I have another demo that I'm going to show you. So what I'm going to do is... I'm going to take you into another thing right here. So I've got lots more to show you. Okay, and then we're at the summary. Great. Now, let's go back to our scenario. My GM is not done. GM's got more work to do. That's how they get paid the big dollars or euros. And here's what they need to do. In order to make this report look better, I want to include some customer highlights. So I got the regional sales data, rock on. Now what I want to do is I want to include some customer highlights. A customer maybe that bought a lot of product from us in the last month or something like this. Okay? So, by the way, why is this? Yeah. Okay. So making sure I wasn't running on battery. So, if I scroll down the document just a little bit, you'll see I've got a spot here. Featured customer. Okay. All right. Featured customer. Now, this is where we have to explore. We have to go outside Word for just a minute. We're going to come back here for the authoring experience, but I want to show you just a couple things. We have a bunch of customer data sitting in a database, and it's right here. So, we have this Contoso database. It's got these tables, you know, our contact table, customer table, and our order table. Okay? That's in our external database. It could be in SQL Server. It could be in Oracle. It doesn't matter. Actually, it could be through a WCF service. It could be through SQL Azure. It doesn't matter to me. Okay? So I have that. Now, what I want to do is I want to surface these data points that you see here in SQL Server. I want to surface those in Office. But even more than Office, remember I talked about in the first slide that one of the bets we made was around providing an experience across PC, phone, and browser. How about the browser experience? I've got a list here. Contact list. This list is the same, will display... not only display, but allow editing of the same data that are back in the SQL Server database. I'm surfacing the SQL Server data right here inside the browser. So if you look, we've got, you know, Pat Coleman and Nancy DeVolio. Good old Nancy. Okay, if I go back to my SQL manager, see here? These are all the contacts in SQL Server. They appear right inside of the browser as just another list. This is just another list in SharePoint. This is possible because of a new technology we introduced in SharePoint 2010 and Office 2010 called Business Connectivity Services. We introduced the technology back in Office in SharePoint 2007 called Business Data Catalog, which allowed you to connect to an external data source and surface the data in the browser, but it was read-only. That's not the case. Now it's read write. So you can see the data appearing here. But what would make this more interesting is if I could also, and by the way, I not only have the contact list, but I have order list, I have the customer list. You can see I've got to fix this so I don't have four decimals after the period, but it doesn't matter. It's data. We can work on the polish. Okay? What I want to do is surface this inside of Word. So in my Word document, we've embedded a content control. This content control has been wired up to business connectivity services. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to say, great, I want to highlight a customer. When I select that, we'll start it again. Oh, great, he takes pictures of that. What a guy. Yes, no, you didn't. All right. It'll be fine. We'll start it again. I'm in the process of converting all these to the RC bits. Because these bits are from September. It's been a while. The challenge is I do this demo pretty frequently, and so I can't change the demo with the new bits because I'm always using the demo, so I need downtime where I'm not using this demo so that I can show it off. All right. Two times the charm here. Ah. Yeah. All right. No. That's okay. I can show you how it works in PowerPoint. It should work in PowerPoint. I've never had the error on this one, so that's okay. Let's go to PowerPoint. Same principle. The idea here in PowerPoint is I'm going to surface this external data. If Word doesn't work, I'll show you PowerPoint. If that doesn't work, I've still got Outlook. So I'm tenacious. I don't give up. Now, if this works, I want to hear that camera. All right, I better hear. All right, bring it. Okay, so here I go. I've got, we'll open up just some random document here. Okay, so the idea here is the same. In this case, I'm not doing a Word document, but I'm doing the same operation. I'm trying to include, I'm surfacing the external data inside of the PowerPoint application. And it's actually using the same underlying technique. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to add a new slide right here. I didn't need to add it. And what I'm going to do is insert customer slide. This is the dialog box we would have seen in Word. And what I'm going to do is select a customer, in this case, Woodgrove Bank. Remember, this list of customers came from my SQL Server database. Now I'm going to say OK. It's now added the slide. Thank you. It has now added the slide, incorporated all the data points from the external data, formatted my table, and put it all in here. So imagine, think about the scenario. My user needs to add a slide and incorporate external data. How would they do this in the old days? In the old days, the way they would do this is they would go to the SQL Server and they would get the data, they'd run a query and then they get the data, or they go to the IT team, ask the web team to create a website to surface the data so that I could then screen scrape the data in HTML, paste the data in PowerPoint, add a new slide, do a bunch of working around with the formatting. It'd take them all day, right? No. Now what they do, they connect up to business connectivity services. They get the website stuff for free, essentially, pretty close to it. They don't have to create custom pages or any of that. It just all happens. And by one click, insert customer slide, it added this entire experience. Every piece of data you see appearing right here came from the SQL Server database. So I've making the user more productive. Look, developer stuff is not all about, because we're all up in our heads. And, we're just into the technology. That's great, but it has to matter to the users. It has to make them more productive or it's not worth it, right? We got to save them time. Now, I'm going to take you into one more before I take you to SQL Azure. That's the extra piece I wasn't going to do, but I'm just going to do it because I feel like doing it, okay? Don't take pictures of that. It's embarrassing. My kids think I'm crazy. No, they know I'm crazy. What about Outlook? Remember, this SQL Server database has contact information. What I want to do, by the way, this quick note. This solution you see right here was created using Visual Studio. It's a PowerPoint add-in, very simple code that uses the PowerPoint object model to add a new slide. It gets the active presentation, adds a new slide, adds the new adds new shapes and things like that. It's very simple code. It's using standard vanilla out-of-the-box kind of PowerPoint stuff to do most of what you see right there. Okay, now let's go to Outlook. Now, we have contact information in an external database. What I want to do is surface the contact information inside of Outlook. Why? Because users like working with contacts in Outlook. It's a good experience. This is the great thing about developing on Office, is that users like the Office experience. They always want to improve it, and that's great. We get that feedback, and we want to improve it. But they like the experience. What you want to do is plug experiences that make sense into the Office application. So now let's go to Outlook and see how that would work. So we go to Outlook, and what I've got is this folder right down here. Contoso, this is a no-code solution. So what I'm about to show you was done entirely with a collection of XML files. So not a single line of code was written for this. So I go here. There's an add-on piece that I'll show you that did have some code, but I'll explain what that piece is when I get there. Right now, everything. The data points you see here are all coming from SQL Server. They look like regular Outlook contacts, do they not? My user shouldn't have to care. They should be able to just open up these contacts and use them. So here they are. Now, see, this is editable, by the way. So if I double-click Pat Coleman, I can actually make changes to this and hit save, and they will write back to the database for me all the way through. Go back to the SQL Server database. Cool, right? But remember, my user isn't obligated to use here. If they wanted to, they could actually go back and use the browser experience. So we're giving them options. But the Outlook experience, clearly very superior, rich experience. But this isn't good enough. So this is provided, by the way, without code. This is just some configuration XML files. What would be better, because I want my user to be even more productive, and the way I'm going to achieve that is when they look at a contact, they also want to know what kind of orders has this customer recently made. What are the recent orders? I'd like to see that right here. I don't want to have to go to a website, go to some custom application. It takes me time. I don't want that. I want to see my order information right here, doggone it. Okay, that's possible. Now, this is the piece where we made a custom add-in. So this was done using Visual Studio, an Outlook add-in, and ribbon extensibility in the Outlook add-in, and we added this. Related orders. There they are. So now my user sees related orders. If I select a different one, it'll show me the different order information. So my user doesn't have to go hunt this information down. It's all right here. By the way, these are InfoPath forms. Those are InfoPath forms. Why would I do that? I'll tell you why. Because these two forms are ones that I could use on a website. So I could actually incorporate these InfoPath forms as part of a web solution, but reuse them as part of an Outlook solution. Why not? Why not reuse the same pieces? Why reinvent them? So I've added some event code so that when I tap on different ones of these, it'll highlight, you know, the different order information. The whole idea behind this is that we're trying to just get data into the applications, provide a rich user experience where it's polished, it's comfortable, it saves them time, it's intuitive. This is the idea. So what I've shown you so far, I mean, it's pretty big across the board. But notice how there's everything I'm showing you incorporates SharePoint in some way. it's incorporating data and there it is. By the way, these demos I'm going to be releasing, not right now because I'm still converting them all to RC, but after we release Office, she's telling me I have 10 minutes left. I'm saying no. No, we're going to stay here all night long. I'm going to be releasing all of this source code. And so all of this will be available. You'll be able to take these pieces and use them and do what you need to do. Okay. Now, let's go back here for a second. I want to show you a couple of things. In Visual Studio. Let's open up Excel for a second. I want to take you into SQL Azure. Why would I go down this detour? Because integrating Windows Azure and SQL Azure in Office solutions is something that I'm hearing more and more and more. People are wanting to do. The benefit, I won't go into a full explanation of what SQL Azure is and what Windows Azure is. I'll give you the 30-second intro. Windows Azure allows you to run, it's basically, the tagline is, it's an operating system in the cloud. You can create services that run in the magical cloud that get load balanced and distributed and scaled and so on without you having to worry about all that infrastructure. They're hosted. You can connect to those from any arbitrary application and accomplish whatever the transaction is that you're trying to do. SQL Azure is the same idea, but it's a database running in the cloud. So imagine, instead of having to point people to my SQL Server installation, the machine that's running SQL Server 2008 R2, imagine if I pointed them to a URL, but that URL or that URI will basically be my server. And it will serve up tables and everything, just like a regular SQL Server database. But it's up in the cloud. That's what I'm going to show you right now. This is one of the, you know, if you're wondering what technology should I start to kind of really think about and get into, this is one. If you were going to invest a little bit in your career, I would invest here. Also, all of this Windows Azure and SQL Azure, tons of momentum at Microsoft for these technologies. So we've only just begun, and we're going to get steam. By the way, how to get to the point where you can do what I'm about to show you? How do you get to that stage? I've saved you some time. I actually posted a blog entry today on my blog, which you'll see right here. Getting started integrating Windows Azure with Office Solutions. I have put in here every screenshot and every description of how to get started from ground zero. Imagine you know nothing about Windows Azure and SQL Azure, and I've basically put it all in here along with some other things. So if you go to my blog, it's all there. So I thought that would please you. I hope it does. Now, integrating the solution. We basically can do that a couple of ways. I'm going to take you into Visual Studio. We've got an Excel workbook. All I did was I did File, New, Project, and I created an Excel workbook solution. If you've never done this before, I recommend you do this. Just go into Visual Studio, and it's a new project. We have New Project. Just go File. Oops. Helps if you slow down. If you go File, New Project, and then choose your solution. So in this case, I created an Excel workbook solution. That's it. Once you do that and you give it a name, you're going to arrive at a thing that looks like this. Now, what I want to do is something extraordinarily simple. What I want to do is add a task pane on the side in my application, and I want to surface data from this cloud database that I created, steps I put out on the internet for you already. And I want to surface, in this case, I'm just going to pick one data field, just to keep it simple. I'm going to put one combo box and tie it to one data field up on that SQL Azure database. If I look over here at my Server Explorer, this is my SQL Azure database, by the way, this top one that you're looking at. Why can't it open it? Oh, I have to add this IP address. Oh, yeah. We'll do that real fast. All right, to enable this demo. So one of the things that they have is the ability to restrict which IP addresses can access it. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to allow the IP address that we're on right here. So 145.103. I didn't think to do this right before. No big deal. It's instructive. Whoops. All right, so that should do it. So basically, that allows us to make the connection. And then we have a local database right here. So here's our local database, and then here is... Yep, so our connection's live, so we should be okay. What's that? Oh, I have an error in the IP address? Oh, here it is. This is going to be important. Thank you, I didn't notice that. That's what I get for adding it on at the last minute, right, guys? You guys are going to make me pay for this now. Ah. Well, we'll go back to here. So, in my data tables, I've basically taken my local database. I've published that database up to SQL Azure. Then what I've done is I've configured my string here, my data source, so that it points to my SQL Azure database. That's all I have to do. Once you go through the steps that I've put out on the internet for you already, all you need to do, because what you're going to do, the steps that I've given you on the internet are how to set up your Windows Azure account, how to configure it, how to do the firewall settings, how to set things up in Visual Studio, how to make sure that you're running the fabric and all of these different things. There are a number of steps in there. Once you get through all of that, you're now ready to start doing these types of operations. And all I'm doing is I'm changing what is normally my, notice how it says data source local, that's my local database. To turn it to an Azure solution, I simply add a connection string that's going to point to the Azure database. That's it. Once I get that far, if I look at my code, when I look at my actual code, I've got here a... Oh, I closed. Let me open up Visual Studio again. I closed the Excel solution. When I look at this Excel solution, what I've added is a task pane. So I'll show you this task pane. This is the thing that's going to appear on the side of Excel when I run it. So I've got a task pane. This one. And what I've done is I've added a combo box to it, right here. And in that combo box, I've configured the data access. So when I look at what the load code is here, here's all the code. Check out how simple this is. This is all the code I needed to connect to my SQL Azure database. That's it. That's the entire summary of code. Here, let me highlight it a little more for you so it's easier to see in the back. That's it. 3 lines of code to connect to SQL Azure. 3 lines. That connection right there, JRDB connection, is that connection string simply points to my SQL Server database up in the cloud instead of my local one. That's it. The rest of the code is exactly the same. Then all I'm doing is I'm connecting to the products. I added a link to SQL class. Again, I've stepped all those steps I've already put up on my blog entry for you so that it's strongly typed. It's the products table. So it has a list of the products. I'm connecting those, and then I'm displaying the product name. Hit F5, that combo box gets loaded with the data from SQL Server up on the cloud. That's it. The idea here is that these are the things that you need to start investing in. As you look at sort of where you need to start going, more and more customers are going to want to include SQL Azure, Windows Azure type solutions. So I encourage you to do that. When time is up, and here we go. We've got just this one last slide. So summary is we're paving the road to software plus services. We've got data-oriented development. We saw it in spades. Saw lots of the data integration with Outlook. We saw it with PowerPoint. We saw it all the OpenXML. We have client extensibility application design. All of you should join our Facebook group. This is how I'm communicating. All the like the blog entries and things like that that I announce those up on the Office Developer Guild. You should join that. If you have customers, they should join it because this is how I'm doing outreach. I'm also doing fun little videos. I helped chase down a guy who tried to steal one of our laptops last night, and I put up a little video of that. And also my blog, that's where the information is, for example, that I just posted. So if you have questions, please email me. My email is john.durant@Microsoft.com, and I hope this was helpful for you.